It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Good morning. Welcome to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. The revolution continues with me, Jet Lacy. I'm filling in this week. Ernie's out in somewhere in California just chilling like a villain playing golf and getting his mind right. He's been stressed and, he's going to be tan, rested, and ready like Nixon in 88 when he gets back, you know. It's all ready to go. So we got a really good show for you today. My man, Powell Gamble, who's the senior editor of Freedom's Phoenix, in studio with me today, and we're going to be talking about the news. He's also running for the 2nd Congressional District in Arizona as a Libertarian for Congress, and we're going to talk a little bit about that because I have some questions about, his run for office. It's something that he does all the time to get the word out. And, one of these days he's going to get in there and he's going to be able to make some changes. But, the powers that be are fighting against people that want to tell the truth. You know, when you're telling the truth, that's exactly what the powers that be don't want. You know, we're going to be discussing certain things in the news. Before the show, we were just talking, and you know how I'm always going on about this is a big eugenics job. Everything that the New World Order is up to is all about making less of us. And Powell semi-disagrees with me, so I always I look forward to having a debate like that because I got my chops down, and I know he's got his chops down. You know, he does a lot of research, and he posts a lot of articles to Freedom's Phoenix, and that's freedomswithanassphoenix.com, and you'll see about probably a third of the stories that are posted up on Freedom's Phoenix are posted by Powell himself. So he really is a driving force in the website. And, I really do enjoy being able to be part of Freedom's Phoenix because I've learned so much. And it really is a website that is driven by the people. It's driven by the readers. And anybody can go up, sign up, set up an account where you can be a reporter of the news. You are a reporter. You are a journalist if you say you are. And the way things are nowadays, that a lot of journalism has to do with posting up relevant articles that other people do. Look, that's all the Drudge Report does, and they're the number one news site in the whole world. So that's exactly the type of thing that you can do is, you know, people come to a site and everybody's sort of on the same page, but there's a lot of, you know, there's always differences of opinions. And I'll tell you what, I hash it out with people on Freedom's Phoenix, and I would encourage you to do the same, you know. But, you know, these are people that I actually like. And, you know, Dave Hodges, who's also a host on this network, I've had my battles with Dave. He's a really good guy, good teacher. You know, but we just feel differently about certain things. So I urge you and encourage you to go to freedomswithanassphoenix.com and check out what's going on. And from the show listing for today's show, I also have links to my Facebook account as well as for the page for The Revolution Continues with me, Jet Lacy, and the Arizona Love Police. And remember, we're going to have the International Free Hug Day on 2010 down at Chase Field. Down in downtown Phoenix, it's worldwide. So you can find out about that on my Facebook page at the Love Police AZ. So when we come back on Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock and The Revolution Continues with me, Jet Lacy, we're going to jump into the news with Powell Gamble, senior editor of freedomsphoenix.com. We'll be right back in just a minute.
There are those that just want to be left alone.
and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Back to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. Attention all planets of the Solar Federation. We have assumed control. You know, that's what they're doing. No matter what, they're trying to assume control over everybody and everything over this whole Earth. And that is why, you know, I disagree with Powell here. You know, just good morning, Powell, by the way.
Good morning, RBN listeners.
Yes. Tell us a little bit about... I was curious about you running for the second congressional district in Arizona. Where is that?
It's on the west side of Phoenix. Runs all the way up essentially to Mojave County, which is where the Colorado River takes its bend and turns downward towards Yuma. And there's a gerrymandered part that literally winds its way, a little thin little neck that winds its way through the Navajo reservation, avoiding any inhabitant so that they don't pick up any Navajos until it opens up and grabs the entire Hopi reservation. So you get this kind of weird monster that starts in west side of Phoenix and works its way to the northwest corner of Arizona and then over to approximately the north central part of Arizona.
Don't you live in the nice section of town, the Arcadia District?
I do not live in District 2.
Yeah. What's the deal with that?
Well, that goes back to no matter what state of the union you're in, if you would like to run for United States Congress, you do not have to live in the district you are running in. The reason is it's one of the earliest United States Supreme Court cases. Whenever one of the original states finally got to a population size of over 100,000, where they split into two districts, it was probably one or two election cycles after that where somebody finally ran who didn't live in the district, and one of his opponents thought, aha, I can go and take this to the Supreme Court and get him thrown off the ballot so I win, you know, And so they went, and the Supreme Court looked at the Constitution and said, no, the Constitution plainly says you have to reside in the state. It doesn't say anything about you have to reside in the district. So that was the decision, and that's the way things are.
That's pretty interesting.
Historically, the reason I ended up with Congressman Trent Franks' district was in 2004, the Libertarians in the Arizona Libertarian Party decided to run a full slate of candidates against all the both the U.S. Senate position, which was McCain at the time, and the 8 districts that Arizona has, U.S. Right. districts. And so I agreed I'd be one of the candidates, but I didn't really care which district I ran in. And when I showed up, there was exactly the number of people for the needed districts in attendance. All of them had a district they wanted, and District 2 I got by default, which pleased me no end because I was really afraid we'd get District 8, which was all the way down in the bottom corner of the state, which would have required a lot of travel. It would take probably 6 hours to drive from Phoenix to get to District 8. I mean, part of it is in Tucson, but most of it's down in the southern. Beautiful area, by the way. But and, of course, the immigration issue is huge down there.
Yeah. That's pretty interesting. So if I'm from Plattsburgh, New York originally, you know, 300 miles due north of New York City. So I could really, if I live there, you could run for office in the Bronx?
Yeah, you could, whichever U.S. district is represented by the Bronx, you could run for it. Now, whether, you know, I guarantee it would come up. It's come up a couple of times on me and the Arizona Republic, which endorsed me in 2004 with the beautiful words of, don't vote for him. He's an extremist. I made sure that was put up right away on my website and endorsed by the Arizona Republic. They also, and besides, he doesn't even live in the district. So, it's, you know, it's a big thing. It's an insult. And my answer when it came up by some journalist in a debate things saying, you don't live there, you know, why? And I just, my answer to that was, yes, but I have plenty of good friends who live in that district, and they need a good representative better than the one they currently have. So,
you know, what's your impetus for running for office when you do? I sense that, you know, I get some certain feelings about, you know, why people run, but I'm really new at the actual political process. So why would someone like you that has a whole bunch of irons in the fire doing your thing and really doesn't like power at all, why would you run for office?
Oh, you never know. I might love power if I actually had it. You know, that's the problem with power. Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. But libertarians, this is my opinion, but I think it was also the opinion of the people who originally founded the Libertarian Party. It was not meant to get libertarians elected. I'm realistic enough to know that the system is set up in a way that there is no way in heck that that any third party candidate is likely to ever get elected, frankly, anywhere in this country. And you say, oh, well, we can show you this or that. And it's like, yeah, that's true. There's Jesse Ventura, et cetera, that occasionally, rarely happens, but they're usually in and out quickly. I mean, they basically don't last long. The other parties make sure, you know, and if you look back at it, there's a reason why they were able to do what they did. And I guarantee you, as Jesse Ventura talks about it, the CIA, you know, he goes into that basement room, you know, he's directed down there. He's now the governor. He's like, well, some people want to meet you, sir. And you know, he's like, there's a room full of guys, and it turned out they're all CIA, and they want to know, how the heck did you get elected, man? Because, you know, we didn't even predict this. And, you know, he basically finds out that that's part of the CIA's domestic program. They're supposed to be able to tell the leadership in Washington what's supposed to happen before it happens, and they didn't. And the leadership wants to know, how the heck did this guy get elected instead of one of our two candidates? Because, frankly, that's the way things work. The Republican and Democratic candidate, whoever they are in the general election, I guarantee you, I don't care where you are in this country, I guarantee you they have been vetted. They are part of the system. There is no way in heck that they would be allowed to sit in those chairs, you know, doing whatever mock debates that pass for debates in this country, if the people in charge didn't care, didn't give a whit which one of them won. And if they did actually care, I guarantee you the one they wanted to win would be the one that would win.
I thought the CIA didn't operate with inside the United States.
Yeah, well, they don't do clandestine activities, supposedly. But then why would they meet in secret, blah, 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 with Jesse Ventura's thing? And, you know, like he's also the guy who basically said, you know, every governor has a CIA contact in every state. You know, this is something there. Yeah, it's just
I hear you.
We're talking about why I run. A good libertarian uses the reason why the Libertarian Party was formed was to use the tools of the state against the state, and that's the reason why I run. It's like, if they're gonna allow me whatever debates, whatever venues, whatever surveys, whatever media attention I may be able to get for running for office to basically deliver the message of non-aggression that is supposed to be indicative of libertarian philosophy, well, that's what I will do. And I've run on the same three points since 2004, which were to get us out of all these wars around the planet and bring our troops home. From the get-go, I was pointing out that we were on a disastrous course of the economy, and of course, for 2004 and 2006, I literally was laughed at for that, basically predicting the end of the United States dollar. And now I'm, you know, I hate to say I feel vindicated, but truthfully, I knew sooner or later it was going to happen, and I'm very sad to see that we're finally here at the end. And we're going to have to face it and deal with it at some point, one way or the other. It doesn't matter whether the politicians put it off or not. And then the third point I've run on consistently was restoring our civil liberties, which, of course, the reason why they take away our civil liberties is so that they don't want us to be in a position to basically oppose them when the economy collapses.
Or to protect ourselves.
That's correct. That's why this recent Supreme Court decision is like, it's nice to see, but I imagine it won't amount to a whole lot.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm sorry, Supreme Court decision with regards to the Second Amendment.
Right. And I think there's, as with all of these bills that are coming out, there's always these nefarious undertones that they don't tell the people straight out. And since it just happened yesterday, I haven't had a chance to really look into it. But I'm very, very, you know, I'm very skeptical when the Supreme Court does anything that would seemingly increase the rights of the individual, especially in that realm with the Second Amendment.
Yeah, it was a 5-4 vote, as usual. And they basically said that we are basically going to be you cannot deprive people of their Second Amendment rights if you're a state or a locality within a state. So basically the Second Amendment applies throughout the United States, but whether they actually enforce that or not, who knows?
Hey, we'll be right back. We'd love to hear from you. 800-313-9443. 1-800-313-9443.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. The Revolution Continues to meet Jet Lacy. Man, it's a great album. Rush 2112 came out in 1976. Man, they really knew what was going on even way back then, that we were losing our freedoms. And, you know, when you know what I know, you'll be there too, because I got to do this. I have to. When you're awakened to something and you know these things that are going on, and you have to act or you're a jerk, you know. At the end of the day, what are you going to say you did when America was falling apart? I want to say that I did something. And I want to say that I feel that I'm a patriot. And I care about my country and I care about my fellow man. And I know that Powell does the same thing. You know, Powell, I don't know if I've ever even asked you, what woke you up to what was really, really, really going on? And how long ago was that?
I guess truthfully, you know, it was when I first got into the Libertarian Party in 98, and it probably took about 2 years of being exposed to Ernie et al. There's a whole bunch of people I could mention.
Like Duggar.
That most people have no idea who they are, but I can tell you that the beauty of being associated with the Arizona Libertarian Party, especially back then, was their hardcore, uncompromising positions on freedom. And you started being exposed to some of the things and some of the activities. And I'd always followed politics, Arizona politics, and I'd known about some of the things like ASCAM, et cetera. And you see Comedy Central talks about how Arizona is like this wacky state. And it's like, you know, we really are, but I sit there and go, it's because it just comes out. It gets outed in Arizona, and these things are going on in every state of the union. And they also do try things here first. I mean, there's certain states that they actually try to see how things go over in this state, and then they spread them everywhere else. But I would bring these things up, and I'd have Ernie or somebody else say, oh, well, you want to know the backstory to that? And they'd start telling me all the nasty little backroom dealing parasites and what was really going on, and the deals that were made to keep people out of prison, politicians out of prison, or that put whistleblowers in prison. So, and you know, that was kind of my eye-opening thing where I really started to realize that it was my trip down the rabbit hole. So,
I had a family member of Charles Keating as my patient when I was still a nurse, like right after he got out of prison. And I was like, people didn't know who he was, but I sure did. And I was like, that guy deserves a kick in the nads from, you know, because he, you know, blew up the savings and loans. There's no such thing as savings and loans anymore. It was the first time they tried what they're trying now again, but this time they're doing it on a much bigger scale. And I was like, every taxpaying America, all American, all 300 million of us, should be able to line up and give that guy a kick in the old family jewels, and he would be getting off easy. You know?
Yeah, what he really did that was very nasty and basically should have probably put him in prison for the rest of his life was he would get these people coming into his savings and loans, and they'd be depositing their money, and he'd be going, yeah, it's federally assured, guarantee, blah, 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 which it was, you know, it counts. And when they get up to a certain amount, they'd call them in, and they'd have these advisors convince them to change over to this higher interest-paying bonds or whatever that I can't remember what they're calling, but basically they were offering essentially higher interest-paying things, deposits, et cetera, that weren't in any way protected. And basically, so greedy people. And basically, in the end, it was a Ponzi scheme that collapsed. And, you know, then you're like, oh, well, sorry.
Yeah. And, I mean, it collapsed the whole system of the savings and loan.
And you're right. It was a microcosm of what ultimately they've now spread into the Federal Reserve, the entire banking system. And that's the reason why you're getting these bailout after bailout. And now Obama wants another bailout. I don't think he's going to get it, but you know he's running around going, we've got to keep spinning, we've got to keep spinning, and he's right. Got to keep doing what we're doing, and it's going to be very interesting to see whether or not, as the two people assume some point you're going to bring up, want to start those printing presses going so that they can keep spinning, or if they're going to try to come up with some other way to keep spinning, or if it's just going to collapse and they'll basically be forced to.
But the thing is, we're on the verge of deflation. And the thing is, the government cannot abide by paying the debts back in dollars that are worth more. They can. The only way they have to go is to inflate the currency.
I tend to agree. And you're right. Right now, deflation is the policy. It's the policy Obama wants. It's
inflation,
the policy that the
Fed, you mean?
No. I think deflation, they've been working very hard for deflation for 2 or 3 years. They're very, very... they do not want to inflate the currency because they already know what happens with that. They get people very upset, but people are already starting to get very upset and very nervous. But the point is, at what point? Now, Ms. Shedlock basically thinks they can keep deflationary policies in place forever. I don't agree with that. I think sooner or later, the bubble's going to burst.
Mm-hmm.
And when it bursts, to me, the last thing they can grasp is hyperinflation. But if you really look, what they're doing now is there's indications they may actually start the hyperinflation even though they aren't forced to.
Right. Hey, when we come back on Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock and The Revolution Continues with me, Jet Lacy, we're just talking about the news and we're going to talk about various topics. Morpheus just rolled in. He's got his cool shades on. Man, it's hot out there, isn't it, brother? Anyway, please give us a call. 1-800-313-9443. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Out in the street, they call it murder.
Jam rock, jump with the thugs and jump at. Two boner within a van back. It in a your handbag, your knapsack, it in a your
back. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. And The Revolution Continues, me, Jet Lacy. You know, out in the streets, they call it murder, but... Hey, they just call it business as usual for the government. So we're here talking to Powell Gammel. And speaking of that, you know, in the news today, there was a painting. Did you see this in the news where Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld recently unveiled a painting of himself that he paid 50 G's for that's going up at the Pentagon? Did you hear about that?
It was a beautiful, beautiful painting. I don't think he was smiling because he didn't want his fangs showing. But.
Yeah. You know, that was the whole thing. He says, "This country, which has treated me so well, exists and prospers because the members of the United States Armed Forces have volunteered to step forward and protect it."
I can't believe it cost $50,000, that painting, though.
Well, there's a rumor why it cost $50,000, because, you know, the artist wanted to do a real, honest picture of Rumsfeld, but Rumsfeld insisted that the artist leave the blood on his hands out of the painting. So he charged him the most.
That explains it, all right.
Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, it's dripping everywhere he goes. thanks for setting me up so I can knock him down there, pal. So we're talking about, you know, these things that, you know, we started yesterday, and, you know, Chuck Gillespie, who, you know, was in studio with me yesterday, because we're doing today. He wanted to learn what it was like to do a radio show. So I was like, hey, why not come down? We'll talk about it and just get his, you know, little dainty toes in the water of broadcast radio.
He'd be good at a radio show, his own radio show.
Absolutely. And he's very talented. He's a musician. He works these big events that, you know, like at the Phoenix Convention Center as an audio engineer. He's really talented. He's just like I was. I mean, you know, I used to have a few pops before I started doing the radio. Now I'm actually, I got the comfort level of talking to people, and even when I'm here by myself, you know, it's just one of those things that you have to, you know, ease yourself into. And you know, I'm thankful that I had Ernest Hancock to help me ease in. And like any blues man, you know, I grew up listening to a lot of blues. They always had someone that they passed on their knowledge to as well. And so I find that when someone teaches me something, that I feel obliged to teach someone else the same. And, you know, it's the way it works.
Teach a man to fish.
Yeah. And, you know, I get real tired of sitting here by myself talking to everybody, you know, but I do love when the callers call in. So please give us a call, 800-313-9443, 1-800-313-9443, because, you know, I'll take all calls, no matter how wacky they are, and I will listen. I will listen, and I will let people have their say. So if you have something that you want to say today, it doesn't matter what the topic is, love to hear from you. We were talking yesterday about this article from Cassandra Anderson from morphcity.com, morphcity.com. And it's made the rounds. It was on Freedom's Phoenix. It was on Infowars.com. And it's been on various places. And it talks about how this Agenda 21, which is sustainable development. And if you really look up Agenda 21, you can get the document itself online. And sustainable development is the new speak word for eugenics. And I know that you disagree, and I've done a lot of research. I know that you've done a lot of research. So when we start talking about the food system, and we talk about companies like Monsanto, who is rated every single year as the worst corporation that exists, even by places like Huffington Post, you know, there's got to be something there.
Well, I will say sustainable development is a buzzword for government planning, centralized planning. And anytime you have government centralized planning, it's a failure. And anytime you have government centralized planning of crops, you're talking massive starvation eventually and depletion of the land, so that basically you won't be able to grow year after year on it the way it is being done now.
Yeah, and I haven't heard people talk about it in quite some time, but I remember reading an article about how they were doing that in Iraq, where Monsanto has come right in the door. They started plowing under people's, you know, in Iraq, a lot of people don't understand, has the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, which is believed by many people to be where the Garden of Eden was. And I don't know. I wasn't there. So, but the thing is that you have two rivers that are very fertile, and they're just decimating their crops, and then they're forcing the farmers to come and grow GMO Monsanto crops that don't regenerate seeds every year.
Yeah, I don't know whether they're actually forcing them, but I've seen what the Monsanto, let's make it specific, has been doing, and it is a very disturbing habit. They've been going into many, many countries, third world countries, and they literally hand out free bags of seeds. I mean, just free. It's like, yeah, here you need we'll cover your entire needs of seeds, these genetically modified seeds. And the problem with them is that many of the genetically modified seeds are not capable of reproduction without special things. So you can't grow a new set of seeds for the next year, which is the way these third world country farmers, basically the farmers throughout the friggin' planet, except for, you know, modern countries such as the United States, which has an incredible farming ability. But they basically wait until the end of their crop. You know, they're harvesting over time out of their fields. But at the end of the year, they leave a certain percentage to let them grow to produce seeds. They, you know, mature and produce seeds instead of picking the fruit, whatever it happens to be, off of the crop. So that percentage creates enough seeds for next year's harvest. They have to do that. And when you do that, and most of these crops, basically they do not survive. The seeds, you know, are perfectly viable for the next year's crop, but if you basically you don't plant them, you hang on to them or whatever, in the storage conditions that most of these places are, which are unrefrigerated, et cetera, basically you're going to lose a lot of viability if you wait until the seeds are 2 years old. And so when you have this stored collection of seeds and Monsanto comes in and induces a farmer to try our crops, blah, blah, blah. Farmer plants them, and lo and behold, man, the viability on these seeds is incredible. He gets incredible crops. He is thrilled and happy, but he basically gets no replacement seeds out of them at the end of the year. And the next year when the Monsanto rep comes in, he's like, oh, well, now you got to pay for our seeds. Mm-hmm. And if this guy basically says, well, nah, that's okay, I'll just use the seeds I had harvested from previously 2 years ago. That I kept stored around, et cetera. Well, now he's going to find out that he's lost a lot of viability. Some of those seeds are going to germinate, no problem, but a fairly significant percentage are not, and he's going to be short of food. Right. And more importantly, not only is he short of food, but he's got to leave a certain amount of that crop at the end of the year to go to seed, so he's got enough to produce the next year's thing, and he's screwed at that point. And there's a real... there's a real tragedy in doing what Monsanto is doing, and they're basically it's like going into a place and offering free crack or free heroin or whatever.
That was my question.
And,
I was like,
and you get him hooked, and then they're really in a bad way for the next year.
Because you're pretty straight up, you know, you're a pretty honest guy, pal. That was what I was going to ask you. I was like, have you ever bought drugs? You know, the first one's always free, and then they get you on the comeback. And, you know, that's what they do, too. But if you watch that movie Food, Inc., and you can get it at just about any video rental store in their little documentary section. It's really popular. They had people in Monsanto. The Monsanto has this group of people that go around, you know, with investigators. And if, you know, basically pollen is tree sperm, you know, or plant sperm. And if the pollen that carries their genetically, you know, patented formula goes in, you know, I guess it would fixes their crop, you know, it pollinates their crop just through the wind, and it has any of their genetic modifications in it, they would sue the owner of the farm that wasn't even trying to use Monsanto.
Totally outrageous and totally true. But what is even more outrageous is keep in mind, why does this exist? It exists because Monsanto and other ag business lobbyists have basically gotten your congressman to pass these laws and create the ability to sue people for what really amounts to their pollution. It's their pollen that is polluting other farmers' crops. Their seeds falling off trucks. We had the thing of the alfalfa fields that were getting hit with genetically modified seeds by some company, and they turned around and sued. These seeds blew in around telephone poles, etc. They weren't even really – they were growing on the farmer's property, but they weren't really even growing in his fields. But because they were growing on his land, Monsanto sued and won basically saying, hey, you're growing our crops. That blew off their darn trucks going down the freeway into the guy's field. And it's like, so basically they're polluting people's property, and yet they're winning. They're basically going in, and they're basically killing off these small farmers. You know, it's a win-win situation for them. Instead of being held responsible for pollution and being taken to court and sued for basically genetically modifying against a farmer's will his crops by pollinating his crops, which, you know, there's plenty of places where if they detect genetic modified foods, you're out. Your food is pulled out of the marketplace, et cetera, because it's not, you know, it wasn't purchased with that in mind.
But see, on top of that, and getting back to the eugenics bit of it all, you know, we are receiving food that this is basically Franken food. That's what they call it. And it doesn't always – when you start tinkering around with God's work and how he created a certain – organism which was meant to feed other organisms, and you start monkeying around with that, you're not going to have the same outcomes. So what we're finding is a lot of these foods, you're having a decrease in the amount of nutrients. So we're having nutrient-poor foods on a global scale, but we're eating almost all of that here in the United States. And then they're trying to bring in the Codex Alimentarius with the World Health Organization, which classifies nutrients as a toxin. And this is where it all ties into the eugenics portion of it. So we start looking at the outlawing vitamins and then getting this crap frankenfood that they just are using this as one of the many, many reasons why they're trying to get rid of us. They can't control 7.5 billion people, nor do they need 7.5 billion people fouling up the earth and everything in it that they believe that they own.
Well, I, for one, am very grateful that they are screwing around with our food for many, many centuries, because, you know, long before there's genetic modification, you've had farmers, et cetera, who've selected for things that were, you know, things that they wanted, preferentially wanted. And in the last, I don't know, 50 years or so, they've been using radioactive bombardment of to create gene damage, really, but basically creating mutants and then looking to see what grows out of the mutants and selecting for mutants that they liked. And when I look at a lot of these so-called hybrid seeds or other modified crops, not genetically modified, but modified through altering genetics, I'm grateful they're there because they've turned out to be wondrous things. Now, are they nutritionally deprived crops? Oh, absolutely, because back in the 70s, the USDA went on a binge where they were looking for perfect-looking fruit, and that's another typical government thing. Mm-hmm. The appearance becomes all important. So what the content, it may not taste anywhere near as tasty as the original thing, but by God, it A, looks perfectly symmetrical, or it's got thicker skin so it allows these automated harvesters to pull them and package them. They survive transportation better, etc. So they may be shooting for certain attributes that ultimately are make the product less desirable, but the initial desirability of the attribute, like strengthen crops, etc., to allow automated picking, was achieved. And unfortunately, in many cases, the product in that case turned out not to be as flavorful. Whether you want to say it has less nutrients in it or not, sometimes that's true. There's no doubt about it. And other times it's probably not true at all.
But. Right. I'm not speaking across the board. I'm just saying that, you know, when you start tinkering with the DNA of certain organisms that are proven, and I'm not saying that, you know, taking two strains of peas and, like, crossbreeding them, you know, in order to try to exact the best of both and eliminate the least. I mean, that's basically plant eugenics, which is exactly what they're trying to do with people, which is what they were doing in Hitler's Germany. They try to positive eugenics is encouraging those that have the attributes that they consider to be positive, encouraging them to breed as much as possible while eliminating those that they find to be less desirable.
Yeah, that's a nice segue, but I don't think it's much of an argument to counter the idea that there's something wrong with frankenfood.
So, I'm just saying that you start doing this when you – why would you – like a pesticide-resistant crop. I mean, with every good comes a bad and every bad comes a good. So when you start tinkering around with the actual, you know – organism itself, you're going to give up certain things on you know, just by the law of averages.
No, that's not true. If pesticide resistance generally is going to be a single gene you're going to put in, you just added a gene. You haven't taken away anything else.
Yeah, you see what happens when they add a couple of chromosomes in a human being? You know, not so good. We come back on Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock, and the revolution continues with me, Jet Lacy. We're going to keep talking with Powell Gammel. We're going to, you know, we disagree, but, you know, it's all friendly, and that's the spirit of the First Amendment, is open debate. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Standing on shaky ground, too close to the edge. Let's see if I know the ledge.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. There's Hancock, and the revolution continues. Me, Jet Lacey, we're rocking out in here, and I love when a little bit of the senior people come in and spend time with me in the studio. I love the looks I get when the music I play. It makes me want to do it more. You know, Barry Hess always makes fun of me for it right on the air, so that even makes me want to do it even more. Anyway, we're talking about this stuff. With the, a lot of it has to do with the Rockefellers, and you know, we're talking about this article from it is morphcity.com by Cassandra Anderson. You know, and you look at all these globalists, and you look at from the Bill Gates, he admitted in a TED talk that they want to reduce the population through vaccines. And you look in the news just yesterday, there was a panel that came out from the CDC that said they should require vaccinations for everybody every year. And, you know, this is the types of things that they're doing that are sure to sterilize people at the very least. They have been proven that they put cancer genes in some of the vaccines. And that's why we work so hard here, you know, and all around the country to end this vaccination, and it actually worked.
Yes, but please, let's be clear. When Bill Gates says he wants to use vaccination to eliminate the population, lower the population, he's talking about a vaccination that would essentially sterilize people. It's literally made to do that, either short-term or permanent sterilization through vaccination. And yeah.
Well, how is that a vaccine? What's it preventing? Pregnancy? A pregnancy vaccine?
Yeah.
Or is that just a semantic term?
That's what he's looking at. It's basically birth control through vaccination. And
but when you're vaccinated,
now, yes, but you want to basically lump in all the vaccines as if all vaccines are going to prevent birth and are going to act as birth control or a eugenics program. And I'm just like going, as much as I, you know, I'm already on record as opposing these massive vaccination programs,
right.
But I'm not going to sit there and make it sound like they're not of use. There are vaccines that can be quite useful, especially if there's an outbreak going on and you'd like to get your hands on a vaccine. But and of course, there's people that would disagree with me on that, but that's fine. But on the other hand, let's be clear. When Bill Gates talks about vaccines for lowering birth rate, he's talking about a vaccine specifically designed as basically a contraceptive. So it's not just like, let's just sneak something into all the vaccines we're putting out there and get those third worlders, you know, knocked down. Now, that wouldn't, I'm absolutely positive there's plenty of people in government and the people in charge of that who are would love to add a little something to the vaccines that they push out the doors. But I suspect after about 3 years, a heck of a lot of the population would realize, of the planet would realize that something's wrong because their birth rates would start to plummet.
Well, what about mercury in the vaccines and, you know, the squalene?
Yeah, but that's not going to cause you to stop having kids. That's poison. That's different.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
A little different. So, okay, that's not killing birth control. That's like killing people.
Okay, so, it's still eugenics.
Yeah, well, yes and no. It depends.
So you got the old and the very young taking these that are the ones that are relying most on the system in order to take care of them. So they just want to go,
yeah,
take this little vaccine. Now they want to give kids two H1N1s every year.
I know, and that's, you know, ridiculous. But, you know, actually that's really more, I think, the military-industrial complex. Well, it's the pharmaceutical-industrial complex paying, you know, having tax subsidies to get these various vaccination programs ongoing.
Well, we're going to keep arguing here on Declare Your Independence. So there's Hancock, Powell, Gammel, and I on The Revolution Continues. Me, Jet Lacey, we'll be back in 1 minute's time. And we got two callers, Lark and Gene, we'll get to as soon as we come back. In the next break, we'll go to Lark in Texas. We'll be right back. 1-800-313-9443. 1-800-313-9443.